the AIDS is on its way to being the leading cause of death in young people.
There is no debate on the scope of the epidemic in many poor countries.
Get tested, because you can get help.
I am hopeful that science will continue to find the critical answers.
No more delays!
I propose the creation of a global fund dedicated to the battle against HIV/AIDS.
Each panel of this huge two-city block quilt bears the name of someone who has died of AIDS.
Our common goal must ultimately be a cure and a vaccine. That must be our first and top priority.
20 years ago, it was the AIDS crisis that mobilized global action and convened urgent international conferences. In 1993, a reporter for the New York Times, who didn't want his death to be the story of the AIDS crisis, explained how his personal story taught him the meaning and importance of journalism.
I feel an obligation to those with AIDS to write about it, and an obligation to the newspaper to write what just about no other reporter in America can cover in quite the same way. And I feel an obligation to myself. This is the place, reporting, where I'm at home. This is the place where I must come to terms with AIDS.
Jeffrey Schmaltz had been a reporter and editor at the New York Times for two decades when he died in 1993 from complications of AIDS at age 39. He spoke to the ABC News program Day One in one of his last interviews. Schmaltz lived the AIDS story in his newsroom before and after he came out as a gay man and as a gay man with AIDS. To remember the impact of Schmaltz's work on this 27th anniversary of World AIDS Day, colleague and fellow reporter Samuel Friedman has assembled Schmaltz's writings into a remarkable biography and tribute, Dying Words, The AIDS Reporting of Jeff Schmaltz and How It Transformed the New York Times.
Jeff Schmaltz was hugely influential in the kind of reporting he was doing about AIDS, really moved all of journalism forward in seeing AIDS not just as a medical story to be covered. Jeff profiled people of various races, sexual orientation, economic class, age, you name it, who were all stricken with AIDS or with HIV. And he put a human face on an epidemic that was becoming a truly national epidemic at that time.
And these human faces were the faces in his story.
Right. When he wrote a profile of Magic Johnson or of Mary Fisher or of Randy Schultz or of Harold Brodkey, he was able to do two things. One is that he wrote with such incredible compassion and empathy, being sick with AIDS himself. The other thing is at the same time, he was completely unflinching writing about them or in some of his first person articles himself, because he felt like, what question can't I ask? I have the ultimate skin in this game, being sick myself. So you get this amazing mixture of tone.
Here's Schmaltz talking about what happened in the New York Times newsroom and how this became a very personal story, not only for himself, but for everyone in the New York Times newsroom.
Suddenly, my vision started to go. I couldn't see the screen well, and I stood up. I thought, if I can just get some air, I'll be all right. I collapsed to the floor and went into a full-blown seizure, grand mal seizure, in the middle of the newsroom. And so that's what then started everything.
Jeff is recalling an incident that happened the last Friday before Christmas of 1990 when he was deputy national editor of the Times. And when he collapses and has that seizure, this is what leads a couple of months later to the confirmation that he has full-blown AIDS. Jeff getting sick had such a huge effect within the Times because of who Jeff was. There had been two others at the Times who had died of AIDS. There had been other gays and lesbians who had come out, although historically the Times newsroom, particularly under Abe Rosenthal in the 80s, had been a very homophobic place, a place in which gays and lesbians were afraid to come out. And here is Jeff, who's one of the most talented people in the entire newsroom, who's the consummate New York Times journalist. And so if there is anyone who is going to change attitudes internally and make everyone in the Times newsroom feel like the AIDS issue is our issue, it struck right at the heart of who we are, it's Jeff.
And here's Jeff talking about precisely those concerns about career and coming out that you mentioned a moment ago.
I didn't tell anybody in the first couple of years at the paper that I was gay. You thought if people found out you were gay that your career would be over. People's careers were over when it became known. It was very scary stuff.
How scary do you think it was to Jeff to not only be in the middle of all this in terms of career, but also to realize at the New York Times, you have a certain added kind of responsibility in reporting a story like this where you really need to bring the society a distance to understand what's going on?
I think in a way, Jeff was incredibly well prepared for the role that destiny and disease gave him because he understood the power of the Times. He knew exactly the bully pulpit the New York Times gave you. And he also knew how to push the form, how to go right up to the edge of advocacy journalism, but staying just inside the line. So these were deeply felt, moving works of journalism, but they also could fit within the New York Times. And especially in that pre-digital media era, the impact of the New York Times as this legacy news organization on the entirety of the news industry was immense. If you think it's influential now, it was even more influential then.
Journalists want to know how the story turns out. Did Jeff have the impression that he wasn't going to live long enough to know how the story that really defined him as a journalist was going to turn out?
Oh, Jeff knew that in a way that we can't really comprehend anymore in this era when, thank God, we have, you know, drug cocktails that can make HIV and AIDS a manageable condition for a long time. Back before that, when you got an AIDS diagnosis, it was a death sentence. And the only question was when the sword of Damocles fell. So Jeff was fully aware that his time was limited and that living about 3 years from first collapse in the newsroom to his death in 1993 gave him a longer lifespan than other people did. So he was fully aware he wasn't going to see the end of it. What's amazing to me is to see how prophetic some of his writing is. I mean, we've talked mostly about AIDS, but in these three dozen articles he did on the AIDS beat and on gay subjects in the last 15 months of his life, there's an article about Hawaii taking up same-sex marriage. He's doing one of the first stories about that movement, which now has come to fruition. Jeff, I'm sure, could not have foreseen that happening within 22 years. And his final article, his posthumously published article, Whatever Happened to AIDS, very presciently raised this question of if this disease becomes manageable, does it fall off the radar? Does it become less of an urgent issue for our society, even though it will continue to kill people and continue to be an incurable disease? And that question still hovers over us, you know, now on World AIDS Day all these years later.
Samuel Friedman is the author of Dying Words, The AIDS Reporting of Jeff Schmaltz and How It Transformed the New York Times. Sam, thanks so much.
Thank you, John.
There's a lot going on right now. Mounting economic inequality, threats to democracy, environmental disaster, the sour stench of chaos in the air. I'm Brooke Gladstone, host of WNYC's On the Media. Want to understand the reasons and the meanings of the narratives that led us here, and maybe how to head them off at the pass? That's On the Media's specialty. Take a listen wherever you get your podcasts.